Chapter 38. Many of the Jews in Crete embrace the Christian faith. About this period, a great number of Jews who dwelt in Crete were convinced to Christianity. Through the following disastrous circumstance, a certain Jewish impostor pretended that he was Moses, and had been one sent from heaven to lead out the Jews inhabiting that island, and conduct them through the sea, for he said that he was the same person who formerly preserved the Israelites by leading them through the Red Sea. During a whole year, therefore, he perambulated the several cities of the island, and persuaded the Jews to believe such assurances. He moreover bid them renounce their money and other property, pledging himself to guide them through a dry sea into the land of promise. Deluded by such expectations, they neglected business of every kind, despising what they possessed, and permitting any one who chose to take it. When the day appointed by this deceiver for their departure had arrived, he himself took the lead, and all followed with their wives and children. He led them therefore until they reached a promontory that overhung the sea, from which he ordered them to fling themselves headlong into it. Those who came first to the precipice did so, and were immediately destroyed, some of them being dashed in pieces against the rocks, and some drowned in the waters, and more would have perished, had not the providence of God led some fishermen and merchants who were Christians to be present. These persons drew out and saved some that were almost drowned, who then in their perilous situation became sensible of the madness of their conduct. The rest they hindered from casting themselves down, by telling them of the destruction of those who had taken the first leap. When at length the Jews perceived how fearfully they had been duped, they blamed first of all their own indiscreet credulity, and then sought to lay hold of the pseudo-Moses in order to put him to death. But they were unable to seize him, for he suddenly disappeared, which induced a general belief that it was some malignant fiend, too, who had assumed a human form for the destruction of their nation in that place. In consequence of this experience, many of the Jews in Crete at that time, abandoning Judaism, attached themselves to the Christian faith. Chapter 39. Preservation of the Church of the Novatians from Fire. A little while after this, Paul, bishop of the Novatians, acquired the reputation of a man truly beloved of God in a greater measure than he had before. For a terrible conflagration having broken out at Constantinople, such as had never happened before, for the fire destroyed the greater part of the city, as the largest of the public granaries, the Achillean bath, one and everything else in the way of the fire were being consumed. It at length approached the church of the Novatians situated near Pelugas. When the bishop Paul saw the church endangered, he ran upon the altar, where he commended to God the preservation of the church and all it contained, nor did he cease to pray not only for it, but also for the city. And God heard him, as the event clearly proved, for although the fire entered this oratory through all its doors and windows, it did no damage. And while many adjacent edifices fell a prey to the devouring element, the church itself was seen unscathed in the midst of the whole conflagration, triumphing over its raging flames. This went on for 2 days and 2 nights. When the fire was extinguished, after it had burnt down a great part of the city, but the church remained entire, and what is more marvelous still, there was not the slightest trace even of smoke to be observed either on its timbers or its walls. This occurred on the 17th of August, in the 14th consulate of Theodosius, which he bore together with Maximus. Too, since that time the Novatians annually celebrate the preservation of their church, on the 17th of August, by special thanksgivings to God, and almost all men, Christians and most of the pagans from that time forth continue to regard that place with veneration as a peculiarly consecrated spot, because of the miracle which was wrought for its safeguard. So much concerning these affairs. Chapter 40. Proclus succeeds Maximian, bishop of Constantinople. Maximian, having peacefully governed the church during 2 years and 5 months, died on the 12th of April, in the consulate of Ariobindus and Aspa. One, this happened to be on the 5th day of the week of fasts which immediately precedes Easter. The day of the week was Thursday. Then the emperor Theodosius, wishing to prevent the disturbances in the church which usually attend the election of a bishop, made a wise provision for this affair. For in order that there might be no dispute again about the choice of a bishop and tumult thus arise, without delaying, before the body of Maximian was interred, He directed the bishops who were then in the city to place Proclus in the episcopal chair, for he had received already letters from Caelestinus, bishop of Rome, approving of this election, which he had forwarded to Cyril of Alexandria, John of Antioch, and Rufus of Thessalonica, in which he assured them that there was no impediment to the translation to another see, of a person who had been nominated and really was the bishop of some one church. Proclus, being thus invested with the bishopric, performed the funeral obsequies of Maximian, but it is now time briefly to give some account of him also. Chapter 41, Excellent Qualities of Proclus. Proclus was a reader at a very early age, and assiduously frequenting the schools, became devoted to the study of rhetoric. On attaining manhood he was in the habit of constant intercourse with Atticus the bishop, having been constituted his secretary. When he had made great progress, his patron promoted him to the rank of deacon, subsequently being elevated to the presbyterate. As we have before stated, he was ordained by Sisinnius to be bishop of Cyzicus. 1. But all these things were done long before. At this time he was allotted the episcopal chair of Constantinople. He was a man of moral excellence equal to any other, for having been trained by Atticus, he was a zealous imitator of all that bishop's virtues. Patience, however, he exercised to a greater degree than his master, who occasionally practiced severities upon the heretics, for Proclus was gentle towards everybody, being convinced that kindness is far more effective than violence in advancing the cause of truth, resolving therefore to vexatiously interfere with no heresy whatever. He restored in his own person to the church that mild and benign dignity of character, which had so often before been unhappily violated. In this respect he followed the example of the emperor Theodosius, for as the latter had determined never to exercise his imperial authority against criminals, so had Proclus likewise purposed not to disquiet those who entertained other sentiments on divine subjects than those which he cherished himself. Chapter 42, Panegyric of the Emperor Theodosius Younger. 1. For these reasons the emperor had the highest esteem for Proclus. For in fact he himself was a pattern to all true clergymen, and never approved of those who attempted to persecute others. Nay, I may venture to affirm, that in meekness he surpassed all those who have ever faithfully borne the sacerdotal office. And what is recorded of Moses in the Book of Numbers, to now the man Moses was very meek, above all the men which were upon the face of the earth, may most justly be applied at this day, for the emperor Theodosius is meek above all the men which are upon the face of the earth. It is because of this meekness that God subdued his enemies without martial conflicts, as the capture of the usurper John, 3, and the subsequent discomfiture of the barbarians clearly demonstrate. For the God of the universe has afforded this most devout emperor in our times supernatural aid of a similar kind to what was vouchsafed to the righteous heretofore. I write not these things from adulation, but truthfully narrate facts such as everybody can attest. Chapter 43, Calamities of the Barbarians who had been the usurper John's allies. After the death of the usurper, the barbarians whom he had called to his assistance against the Romans, made preparations for ravaging the Roman provinces. The emperor being informed of this, immediately, as his custom was, committed the management of the matter to God, and continuing in earnest prayer, he speedily obtained what he sought. For it is worthwhile to give attention to disasters which befell the barbarians. 1. For their chief, whose name was Ruges, was struck dead with a thunderbolt. Then a plague followed which destroyed most of the men who were under him, and as if this was not sufficient, fire came down from heaven, and consumed many of the survivors. This filled the barbarians with the utmost terror, not so much because they had dared to take up arms against a nation of such valor as the Romans possessed, as that they perceived them to be assisted by a mighty God. On this occasion, Proclus the bishop preached a sermon in the church in which he applied a prophecy out of Ezekiel to the deliverance effected by God in the late emergency, and was in consequence much admired. This is the language of the prophecy, 2. And thou, son of man, prophesy against Gog the prince of Rhodes, Mozok, and Thubal, for I will judge him with death, and with blood, and with overflowing rain, and with hailstones. I will also rain fire and brimstone upon him, and upon all his bands, and upon many nations that are with him. And I will be magnified, and glorified, and I will be known in the eyes of many nations, and they shall know that I am the Lord." This application of the prophecy was received with great applause, as I have said, and enhanced the estimation in which Proclus was held. Moreover, the providence of God rewarded the meekness of the emperor in various other ways, one of which was the following. Chapter 44, Marriage of the Emperor Valentinian with Eudoxia, the daughter of Theodosius. He had by the Empress Eudoxia, his wife, a daughter named Eudoxia. Her his cousin Valentinian, appointed by him emperor of the West, demanded for himself in marriage. When the emperor Theodosius had given his assent to this proposal, and they had consulted with each other as to the place on the frontiers of both empires, where it would be desirable that the marriage should be celebrated, it was decided that both parties should go to Thessalonica, which is about halfway, for this purpose. But Valentinian sent a message to the effect that he would not give him the trouble of coming, for that he himself would go to Constantinople. Accordingly, having secured the western parts with a sufficient guard, he proceeded thither on account of his nuptials, which were celebrated in the consulate of Isidore and Senator, one after which he returned with his wife into the west. This auspicious event took place at that time. Chapter 45, The body of John Chrysostom transferred to Constantinople, and placed in the church of the apostles by the emperor at the instigation of Proclus. Not long after this, Proclus the bishop brought back to the church those who had separated themselves from it on account of Bishop John's deposition, he having soothed the irritation by a prudent expedient. What this was we must now recount. Having obtained the emperor's permission, he removed the body of John from Comana, where it was buried, to Constantinople, in the 35th year after his deposition. And when he had carried it in solemn procession through the city, he deposited it with much honor in the church term the apostles. By this means the admirers of that prelate were conciliated, and again associated in communion with the Catholic Church. This happened on the 27th of January, in the 16th consulate of the Emperor Theodosius. One, but it astonishes me that envy, which has been vented against Trajan since his death, has spared John. For the former was excommunicated by Theophilus about 200 years after his decease, while the latter was restored to communion by Proclus in the 35th year after his death. So different was Proclus from Theophilus. And men of observation and intelligence cannot be deceived in reference to how these things were done and are continually being done. Chapter 46, Death of Paul, Bishop of the Novatians, and election of Marcian as his successor. A little while after the removal of John's body, Paul, Bishop of the Novatians, died, on the 21st of July, under the same consulate, one who at his own funeral united, in a certain sense, all the different sects into one church. For all parties attended his body to the tomb, chanting psalms together, inasmuch as even during his lifetime by his rectitude he was in universal esteem by all. But as Paul just before his death performed a memorable act, I deem it advantageous to insert it in this history, as it may be interesting to the readers of this work to be acquainted with it, and test the brilliancy of that important deed should be obscured by dwelling on circumstantial details of minor consequence. I shall not stay to expatiate on the strictness with which he maintained his ascetic discipline as to diet even throughout his illness, without the least departure from the course he had prescribed for himself, or the omission of any of the ordinary exercises of devotion with his accustomed fervor. But what was this deed? Conscious that his departure was at hand, he sent for all the presbyters of the churches under his care, and thus addressed them: "Give your attention while I am alive to the election of a bishop to preside over you, lest the peace of your churches should hereafter be disturbed." They having answered that this affair had better not be left to them, "for inasmuch," said they, "as some of us have one judgment about the matter, and some another, we would by no means nominate the same individual. We wish therefore that you would yourself designate the person you would desire to succeed you." "Give me then," said Paul, "this declaration of yours in writing, that you will elect him whom I should appoint." When they had written this pledge, and ratified it by their signatures, Paul, rising in his bed and sitting up, wrote the name of Marcin in the paper, without informing any of those present what he had inserted. This person had been promoted to the rank of presbyter, and instructed in the ascetic discipline by him, but was then gone abroad. Having folded this document and put his own seal on it, he caused the principal presbyters to seal it also, after which he delivered it into the hands of Marcus, a bishop of the Novatians in Scythia, who was at that time staying at Constantinople, to whom he thus spake, "If it shall please God that I should continue much longer in this life, restore me this deposit, now entrusted to your safekeeping. But should it seem fit to him to remove me, you will herein discover whom I have chosen as my successor in the bishopric." Soon after this he died, and on the third day after his death, the paper having been unfolded in the presence of a great number of persons, Marcin's name was found within it, when they all cried out that he was worthy of the honor. Messengers were therefore sent off without delay to bring him to Constantinople. These, by a pious fraud, finding him residing at Tiberiopolis in Phrygia, brought him back with them, whereupon he was ordained and placed in the episcopal chair on the 21st of the same month. 2. Chapter 47, The Empress Eudocia Goes to Jerusalem, sent there by the Emperor Theodosius. Moreover, the Emperor Theodosius offered up thanksgivings to God for the blessings which had been conferred upon him, at the same time reverencing Christ with the most special honors. He also sent his wife Eudocia to Jerusalem, one she having bound herself by a vow to go thither, should she live to see the marriage of her daughter. The Empress therefore, on her visit to the sacred city, adorned its churches with the most costly gifts, and both then, and after her return, decorated all the churches in the other cities of the East with a variety of ornaments. Chapter 48, Thalassius is ordained bishop of Caesarea in Cappadocia. About this same time, under the 17th consulate of Theodosius, one Priclus the bishop undertook the performance of an act, such as no one among the ancients had done. Firmus, bishop of Caesarea in Cappadocia, being dead, the inhabitants of that place came to Constantinople to consult Proclus about the appointment of a bishop. While Proclus was considering whom he should prefer to that see, it so happened that all the senators came to the church to visit him on the Sabbath day, among whom was Thalassius also, a man who had administered the government of the nations and cities of Illyricum. And as it was reported that the emperor was about to entrust the government of the eastern parts to him, Proclus laid his hands on him, and ordained him bishop of Caesarea, instead of praetorian prefect. In such a flourishing condition were the affairs of the church at this time. But we shall here close our history, praying that the church is everywhere, with the cities and nations, may live in peace, for as long as peace continues, those who desire to write histories will find no materials for their purpose. And we ourselves, O holy man of God, Theodore, should have been unable to accomplish in 7 books the task we undertook at your request, had the lovers of seditions chosen to be quiet. This last book contains an account of the transactions of 32 years, and the whole history, which is comprised in 7 books, comprehends a period of 140 years. 2. It commences from the first year of the 271st Olympiad, in which Constantine was proclaimed emperor, and ends at the second year of the 305th Olympiad, in which the Emperor Theodosius bore his 17th consulate. 3. Taken from the early Church Fathers and other works originally published by W.M.B. Erdman's Pub Company, in English in Edinburgh, Scotland, beginning in 1867. LNPF 2/2, Schaff and Weiss.